and welcome to another episode of Gopher Gridiron Radio. I'm Luke Buer.
And I'm GopherIllustrated.com publisher Ryan Burns, and we welcome you guys back to this COVID Gopher podcast edition, Luke.
That doesn't have a great ring to it.
I mean, we try our best, but I know we've been getting tweets here throughout the entire month of April for a new podcast, because I think it's like day 45 or day 46 here in Minnesota of the COVID quarantine, and everybody is essentially binge through Netflix. You're discovering Hulu again. Maybe you're on CBS All Access. I'm not entirely sure where you're at, but you're looking for anything new, especially as it's starting to get warm out.
Did I tell you that I got rid of cable?
Did you cord cut?
I cord cut. Yeah.
Wow.
I'm dead serious. They got the fiber internet here in my neighborhood. We went all cordless. We're just using lights now, right now. It's beautiful.
I'm so jealous you have fiber. I mean, what do you get, like 300 down and 300 up?
Yeah, that actually wired up, I can get almost a gig. It's pretty wild. I'm a big fan.
I hate you so much.
I know.
I pay for Comcast down here in Northeast Minneapolis, and I get like 150 down and like 5 up, and I know it's pretty good, but gosh, it's not fiber.
I have to be completely honest. Maybe we'll cover this next time. I haven't actually gotten rid of the cable boxes yet. I still got like 5 or 6 days, and so I'm gonna go to the store. I'm really curious to see how that goes down as I try to quit. So that'll be pretty interesting.
So you haven't, what is this, a middle school relationship? You have told them that you're cord cutting, but you've cord cut?
Yeah, like I have all the infrastructure now to cord cut. I wanted to make sure it worked first. I called one of my buddies who you actually know, and he confirmed to me that YouTube TV works pretty well.
Yeah, it does.
But so we tried YouTube TV for a little bit, and we're like, okay, I think this is going to work. And so, yeah. There we are. We are cord cut here in the Buer house.
Well, I'm jealous because as easy as that transition was for you to cord cut, you know that I'm in the house hunting market.
Yes.
And trying to find a decent house for a decent price in the Minneapolis area is an absolute disaster because there's not enough houses on the market. There's too many of us looking.
Yep.
And maybe I'm going to end up living out by you in Roseville, Luke. We'll have to see.
All right. So basically what I'm hearing is your plea is to all those people that listen to this podcast, if you want to be neighbors with Ryan Burns, let him know.
You want to sell me your house.
Either sell you his house. He might be able to give you inside Gopher information, and or you could be neighbors with him, both of which wouldn't be terrible ideas.
I mean, if you sold me your house, I would give you all the unlimited Gopher scoop all the time if you gave me a decent price, but it's been an adventure. But I know folks don't want to listen to me complain about house hunting. They're here for some gopher info, Luke. So what do we talk about today?
So we recorded two separate segments, something we really don't do very often. We talked a little bit of recruiting with you because, quite frankly, April has been a recruiting boom. And then also we talked to our good buddy Eric Vigo about the quarantine and basically what it has done to higher education athletics. So basically how it impacts football, because this is a football podcast. So we get into both of those, basically to split up both of these segments. There's gonna be a little bumper music in between them.
Gosh, we're so fancy now. Oh, and yeah. I will say, I'm pretty sure I screwed up on the recruiting part. I said they've got 8 commits in April. It's been 9.
Oh, wow.
It's been a crazy month. And if you want to know about that, Luke, do you know where I should direct people to?
Again, to the DNS name, GopherIllustrated.com.
That would be accurate.
All right. So we'll get right into this with the recruiting starting first. Okay, Ryan. So I don't follow recruiting terribly close. You're not surprised about that. But
yeah, here's my surprise face. Like, what is this year? What year is this? Like of this podcast, 4?
4 or 5. I'm not particularly sure. The majority of times that I have curiosity in a recruit, it has more to do with the unique circumstances around,
I'll get a text every once in a while, or I should say a Google Hangout message, and so that happened, and I'll be like, yep, good job, Luke.
Yeah. it's usually like multiple hours later, or like multiple days later.
You have a small child at home, it's fine.
Well, I haven't for a long time, and I still didn't care. But I do recognize the fact that recruiting is the lifeline of a program. There's no question about that. And frankly speaking, I'm not delusional when I see that the Gophers are, you know, somewhere in the top 10 nationally. That's a good thing. I understand too that it's not going to last per se. They'll probably fall just because of the nature of how they recruit, and you know, they do a lot of it early, right? And they also don't have a ton of scholarships to give away. But the success is very, very encouraging. So let's get into who some of these guys are, and you know, what makes this 21, or this would be 2021 class, right?
You're right. Yeah, 2021.
Wow, look at that. What makes these rankings climb so high? Who are some of these guys?
Yeah, it's been a crazy month. I mean, whether it's on Gopher Illustrated or whether that's just you look at this recruiting class. I mean, as we sit here, just a couple of days away from May, they have the sixth rated class in the country via the composite. I think they're sixth or seventh via just 24/7 zone rankings. And that's where they need to be, because you look at the other teams right around them, Wisconsin and Iowa say hello. And last I checked, those are the two teams that Minnesota is going to have to beat more than likely to win a Big Ten West title. So you have to be recruiting as good, or as well, I should say, as the teams that you're going to have to be challenging with. And I think that's what Minnesota is. But mm-hmm. I think you could arguably say, if it's not one of the best months of recruiting in the internet era, it's certainly the best April, because as we sit here, there's been eight commits, and it's been wild. I mean, I had no idea what to expect when COVID happened and it took away all of these different type of on-campus visits, and then Minnesota got into these virtual tours, and eight commitments later, it's been a month. And that's where, I mean, if you want to start with the headline, that'd be Avante Dickerson, who a cornerback from Nebraska that ranks as the second highest recruit ever to commit to Minnesota behind only Jeff Jones. He's got his 96 rating, which is absurd for Gopher football recruiting. I think we have him as the number 56 player in the country, someone that has all the physical makeup, or has the entire physical makeup that you look for in a cornerback. He is 6 foot. He is incredibly long. He is incredibly fast, and he can do just about anything he wants to on a football field. And that's why we have him rated so high. That's why Ohio State and LSU and Nebraska and any other team that he wanted an offer from, well, that young man got it. And that's why, you know, he's as highly rated as he is, among other things. And so that's where you look at this, and you look at why did Minnesota ultimately win out for him. It's the relationship they had with him. And because when you have all these offers and you have all these coaches trying to talk to you, and you're getting potentially hundreds of text messages a day, I mean, you pick out a couple that stand out to you. And last I checked, PJ Fleck and his staff kind of stand out a little bit. And that's where the relationship he'd built with Joe Harris-Simiak and Paul Haynes, the two defensive back coaches, really made waves. And that's where you're able to get a guy like Avante Dickerson. But I think truly it starts with Steven Ortiz and what he's been able to do in terms of just being a trendsetter. You don't see a guy from Arizona commit to Minnesota. I mean, it just really hasn't happened ever. Especially a four-star guy that has all these offers.
Did I tell you this? I don't know if in our Twitter exchange about Ortiz, if I told you this. So this is how I found out that he committed. I have a cousin that goes, I have multiple cousins that go to the University of Washington. It's no surprise to most people that I'm a University of Washington fan. And these cousins texted me and they're like, this is stupid. And I was like, I have no idea what you're talking about. And they're like, yeah, well, Minnesota just got a commitment from a guy that was a lock to come to UW. And I was like, so I look up this kid. And his what is it called, crystal ball? His crystal ball was like basically all towards Washington until the very last minute when he committed to Minnesota.
Yeah, it's not every day, like I said, that Minnesota can go into Pac-12 or Pac-10. Pac-12, my God, it's been so long since college football happened. I'm losing my mind. And they go in and get a guy that Washington thought was a lock to them. Now, I mean, I know some of the things behind the scenes there in terms of what went down, I'm pretty sure that the Ortiz family doesn't want any of that out there, but I can assure you of this. I know Washington is trying to spin it that they cooled on him. Yeah, they didn't. that is not accurate. And that's kind of the way, you know, the ball got rolling with all these high profile type of recruits, with Stephen Ortiz deciding he wanted to be different and he wanted to come to a place he's never seen before. And he's really been in the ear of a lot of these guys, and we'll see what happens here coming up in May, but I wouldn't be surprised to see some more dominoes continue to fall. And for you Gopher Illustrated members, I mean, I talked about dominoes potentially falling starting in right after Stephen Ortiz committed, and you've seen the effects of that. And that's why Minnesota's got a top six, top seven recruiting class right now. And it's kind of just been another one and another one and another one. I mean, you give a couple of receivers the quality that they do in Lamecki Brockington and Brady Boyd, and you have a guy from South Lake Carroll, Texas, who has a legitimate verified 4440 on your roster or ahead in your commitment list anywhere, and you beat out some Texas schools and Oklahoma State to land him. I mean, it's not every day you do that. It's not every day you go into Georgia and get a guy with SEC offers that wanted him, that he's picked up since the end of his junior season, but that's what Minnesota's done in Lamecki Brockington. I mean, you get a guy, it's not every day you go into Ohio and flip a guy from Kentucky. For those of you who don't know who Vince Morrow is, he's one of the highest paid guys in the SEC because he is a recruiting fiend. That's all he does. And he does it really well, is he recruits the hell out of Michigan and he recruits the hell out of Ohio. And that's where Devin Williams, the linebacker that was committed to them, where it's where he was. And Minnesota goes in, flips him sight unseen in terms of he's never been to campus before, a guy that Joe Rossi loves. And you just continue to go down the list. And it's just like, even the two newest commits, or two of the newer ones, or the three newer ones here in Albert Regis, Demarion Alexander, Demarion Crumpley, all three never seen campus. They've seen what's going on. Demarion wasn't stupid. He knew that Minnesota was getting short on available spots in their corner room in terms of Stephen Ortiz took a spot. Avante Dickerson took a spot, and he knew Minnesota was only taking three corners. Well, better grab my spot before it goes. And then you look at a couple of these Texas defensive linemen that Minnesota's grabbed. I mean, Demarion Alexander, I think, is a very high ceiling to be that rush end type. And by rush end, for those of you, again, the Carter Coughlin, the Boye Mafe, the Thomas Rush types, where big, long, athletic, and have a little bit of twitch in them. And I think Demarion Alexander's best days are ahead of him, especially after he gets into a college weight program. And then maybe one of the, like, I shouldn't say the strangest, but the most unique prospects I think I've covered in years, Albert Regis. A guy from LaPorte, Texas, just committed tonight. He is – so, Luke, I'm going to tell you this. He ran an 11-2 100 meter. He is 290 pounds when he ran that. He is just an enigma of athleticism where he's not the biggest guy in the world, probably 6'1", but he runs an 11-2 100. He's on the 4x1 team at his high school in Texas. He benches over 400 pounds. He squats over 500. If you haven't watched his highlight tape, he is the first 4 minutes of it is him playing tight end, and he is as athletic as I've seen a 290-pound man before, as I've ever seen in my entire life. I mean, this is a guy I'm going to be kind of banging the table here for four-star status on 24/7. Just a number of things that he could do athletically at his size is something that you don't find very often. And I think he can be a very impactful defensive tackle. I think he's a little bit smaller, Keontae Shad, and I think I'm pretty high on Keontae Shad, I think, compared to the rest. But, I mean, 8 commitments in this month. You get a couple of receivers that I know Simon and Fleck really, really wanted. Joe Rossi gets a linebacker he's been trying to get for a long time in Devin Williams. We haven't even talked about Sam Jackson getting back in the boat. He was Minnesota's first commitment of the 2021 class. Then he decides to reopen his recruitment. I believe he earned 17 offers during that period from schools such as Oregon, Notre Dame, Iowa, Wisconsin. Ends up rejoining the boat as an athlete. Before you ask me what's he going to be, I'm going to tell you he's going to be an offensive athlete. I don't know whether that's going to be a quarterback and where he's going to get a shot. whether that's at wide receiver where he played as a sophomore, you figure it out. And I can assure you that the staff has told him and been very cut and dry with him about where he stands as an athlete on their board, and he's okay with that. And I mean, it's even one of the crazier things is Notre Dame offered Sam Jackson as a cornerback, and I was talking with his high school coach. He's like, Sam has never played a single snap of corner in his entire life. I go, so why does Notre Dame want him there? Because he goes, that's how freaky of an athlete he is. He goes, they came to one of our workouts. They saw him do some things athletically, and they looked at me and said, he's got an offer, and that's where it's going to be. We know he hasn't played it, but we think he can come in from day one. I mean, that's the kind of caliber of athlete you're getting in Sam Jackson and why he's a four-star. So it's been a hell of a month, and that's why you're the number six class in the country, and we'll see how things continue to go here as some more guys may be making some decisions here in the near future. And if you want to learn more, Luke, do you know where I should direct people to?
Probably the DNS of gopherillustrated.com.
That would be accurate. Dollar for your first month. It's either 30 or 50 or 60% off an annual. I mean, just give it a few days. If you with the number of deals we got going right now, because again, we understand that times are tough in COVID, and trust me, I'm a guy writing about sports that are canceled. So I am well aware of the difficulties of it. But bottom line, Luke, is with Avante Dickerson, Stephen Ortiz, Sam Jackson, Devin Williams, Lameke Brockington, Brady Boyd, Albert Regis, Demarion Alexander, Tamarian Crumpley. I mean, it's been an April to remember for PJ Fleck. And this is a recruiting month that I think when you look a few years down the line, if Minnesota continues to sustain this type of success, this is a month you can look back to and point to. This is where it really started to kind of get going again for PJ Fleck.
All right, Ryan, we are very fortunate to be joined by our good friend from basically everywhere. He's at The Athletic, Gopher Puck Live, the Gopher Puck Live podcast, Eric Vigo. Eric, thank you for joining us once again.
It's my pleasure.
Yeah, it's super fun. We got through our technical difficulties, and here we are. We were able to connect. Hopefully, the audio turns out well. We'll cross our fingers on that. But more importantly, that's not why we had you join. We had you join because this pandemic has changed the landscape of college athletics considerably, being that first and foremost, there is no spring sports, period. And now we're staring down fall in the not too distant future after this upcoming summer. And, you know, football is really in question. So first and foremost, Eric, what happens if there is no football?
Well, basically college athletics as we know it today depends on the golden goose that is college football. It's the revenue source that funds all these Olympic sports, all these non-revenue sports. It's kind of the lifeblood of college athletics as it's become. And so without college football, I just don't see institutions being able to foot the bill for all their other sports. So I think athletic directors, presidents, conference commissioners are going to be very motivated to find a way to get the season played.
Yeah, absolutely. So when we look at other institutions, you know, Minnesota, what are they running, like 25 sports right now? Something like that?
Yeah, it's one of the most.
Yeah, they have one of the most. Conversely, there are other schools that are much smaller. I think Wisconsin's something like 13. You know, are schools with fewer number of sports at an advantage here? If you know, football doesn't happen, but I seriously doubt that that happens, that we don't have football in 2020, 2021.
I think maybe there is some advantage to other schools. When you look at an institution like Madison, their budget, you know, they don't have as many expenses as football's not going on, but it's still going to be a significant hit. I mean, you start looking at the projections for schools operating without students on campus and without that kind of revenue, you're looking at $350 million deficits for these institutions.
Like, I guess the question too, and I don't know, I've been thinking, even can universities afford to basically do this distance learning thing? Like, at some point you have to think, like, they even have to just get back to school in general, right? it just doesn't seem tenable to continue to do this distance learning. Like when I look at distance learning, there's a reason that's a cheaper option in a lot of ways, like a MOOC or something else, where basically it's cheaper because the product isn't nearly as good as being on campus, or it doesn't gravitate or doesn't have that gravitational pull to bring in, you know, smart professors, et cetera, to teach at that level. It hasn't gained mass appeal yet because there is still such a behemoth that is major research university to pull those people in.
Yeah, especially at a place like Minnesota, such a big part of the experience is integrating with your classmates, living with them, getting those research opportunities, and just having all those connections that you don't get with a distance learning. And I think we've seen around the country students almost looking for a rebate on their spring distance learning experience. And if institutions go into the fall doing the same distance learning, you might have a lot of students, you know, withdraw for the time being and wait it out until they can be back on campus. And it's going to be tough for institutions to even operate with that kind of environment. So I think there's a strong motivation to get students back on campus in the fall. Whether or not that leads to a traditional sports season, it's just going to be really unlikely based on the timelines we're seeing from the health officials.
Burns, percent chance you would have actually be holding a college degree if you would have had to do distance learning?
48% would have been great. I mean, that's less than a coin flip, but I mean, that's where it's, I mean, so like both your points, I mean, Eric, you mentioned, you know, football is kind of the golden goose, and it's just like, I don't think folks really fully understand the ramifications of if college football isn't played in the next, say, 12 months. So we're here at the end of April. I mean, how devastating would that be to the University of Minnesota? I think I know the impact, but you know it far greater. I mean, how many sports would Mark Coyle have to drop just to make really ends meet?
Well, I think you'd be seeing schools try to put everything on pause as much as they could. You know, you've seen schools already have coaches go on furlough or take voluntary pay cuts, which is probably the more tenable term across the country to use as voluntary pay cuts. And that's just anticipating the budget hit with them coming back. If you have a season where you're canceling things or delaying things, you're going to see more of these things come out because the numbers just don't work for institutions without that kind of revenue.
Yeah. I mean, you look at the economics and
you're looking at Minnesota where they're trying to get to about $130 million budget, they're not going to get there without that kind of revenue.
Right.
And that's where it's even, I mean, yes, butts in the seat matters, but I also think there's a misconception, and I think Darren Revelle is one of the people behind it, that, I mean, these colleges needs butts in the seats. Now, you can correct me if I'm wrong, because you know dang well, Eric, you're the guy I go to for anything financially with the University of Minnesota. But isn't it the revenue they get from the media rights and the TV about four times, if not more, than what they get in ticket revenue? For football, that would be specifically.
Yeah, for football, I mean, an institution like Minnesota, they get about $12 million in a good year of ticket sales, and they'll get another $8 million in contributions. You know, that scholarship seating donation that people are making and other donations that get associated with the season. But, you know, they're looking at $50, $60 million from the conference, from TV, and from bowl revenue. So it's a bigger picture to get both of those things. And, you know, smaller, non-Big Ten schools, you know, they rely on the ticket revenue even more.
So when you look at it, when you look at like what might come, like, I think we can unanimously agree that college football is going to happen in some way, shape or form, right? It seems inconceivable that we could go forward and it doesn't happen because the economics to me, it just doesn't work out, and it could really devastate probably college athletics as we know it if it doesn't happen. Like, and some people go like, well, it's just 1 year. It's like, no, I'm pretty sure like you could basically bankrupt athletic departments, and I don't know that the universities are going to go in. Well, they might bail them out. Maybe not. I don't know. I'm thinking out loud here.
Work through it. I mean, again, Eric would be the all knowing. And I guess Eric, what I've heard is, at least from the Minnesota football staff side of things, they expect the season to be played. They don't expect a season to be played until January at the earliest. Now, I know that the football staff's biggest concern is player safety. Is if the season is in January and it goes until April or May, how in the world do you then turn around and potentially play another college football season in October, December, January with, you know, you'd be playing something about 20 something games in a 12 month period, which they don't even do that in the NFL unless, like, again, you can say what you will about preseason games and not everybody makes the playoffs. But I mean, what have you heard? Because like I said, I'd be surprised if they happened before January, but I mean, this is where I'd love to get your opinion.
Well, I've heard things that indicate a reduced schedule because of that workload that they would be forcing on student athletes. And so I don't think you're going to see traditional schedules the next two seasons if everything gets pushed out because of that number of games within one calendar year. You know, it's two seasons and they have the break in between, but if you have players who have big injuries, you know, they're going to want timelines to recover and still come back and get ready for the draft that following year. So I think you're going to see some things where compressed timelines could happen, but I also know that there's a lot of schools in the group of five that rely on scheduling the Power Five schools to even make their budgets work. And so it's a really complicated issue. And then you're looking at a country where everybody's moving at a different speed. And so, you know, you might have teams in the Pac-12 or the SEC that are ready to go and teams in the Big Ten that aren't. So it's going to be a huge complicated issue. They're going to find a way to make it work. And I think the first step is to get students back on campus in the fall and see how they can handle it.
To me, that's going to be the biggest thing to watch is what happens if Minnesota can have students on campus this fall, but Iowa can't. Does that mean that Iowa can come to Minnesota to play, but Minnesota can go to Iowa to play? I mean, there's just so many different ramifications there, isn't there?
There are a ton of ramifications. What happens when you have players who start testing positive who played a team the week before, and now you have all these players who can't be around their teams for 14 days or however long they decide to quarantine people? And with a football team where you have 85 scholarship players, how do you make that work from a safety issue? I know in a lot of small school football programs, when you start having injuries to your players and you're throwing out eighth and ninth graders out there against seniors, you know, it's a big deal. Well, there's a big difference between 18-year-old freshmen and 23, 24-year-old seniors in college football, especially at a Big Ten institution. So there's some safety issues, too, to think about if the rosters are maintained to be what they are.
Well, I mean, there's not only that, but then there's the whole, So you hear people talk about, well, they don't have to be fans at games, right? Well, that maybe works for professional sports, where in professional sports, those people are being compensated for their time. But in college sports, if there's no determining factor that we know with an absolute shadow of a doubt that, you know, all these people can play together and it's going to be safe, how can you ask those players to go out and play when they potentially could catch a virus like this? Like, then they're not getting compensated for this. I know that we're talking the day that they actually pass some like name, image, license thing. So maybe they can get compensated in some way, but directly speaking, I don't think that I just don't see how they can play. I'm starting to convince myself how they can even play. There's no way they can play. Maybe I just don't know how that's going to work. It's so complicated. The issue is just so incredibly complicated.
It is incredibly complicated. And that's what's facing all these schools as they push back, making decisions on when to get people back on campus from the first, you know, decision. And it's going to be a difficult one. And, you know, we just have to hope that there's some treatments that come through that can shorten the window of problems with this virus.
So Ryan, just out of curiosity, I'm seeing some people estimate that, you know, from a timeline, like even if they were like, okay, we can start football activities, they're not going to have any games for 2-ish plus months because of the physical aspect when it comes to, like, I've heard you talk about soft tissue injuries, et cetera. Like, guys aren't, there's no guarantee guys are going to be in shape because they've been away for so long.
And this, I mean, yes, to an extent where I know I saw Matt Campbell brought it up and I guess it hadn't even really occurred to me. I mean, I was a former Division III football player, and at St. Olaf back in the early 2000 and what was it 2011, 2012. I mean, D3 players, you're not on campus the entire summer. You show up in August for the first day of fall camp, and you're expected to be in shape. And you go through a conditioning drill, and then, I mean, you're starting 2-a-days. And so it can be done. It is done every single year in Division III athletics, where you're just expected to go home, do the workouts, and then show up, hopefully in shape. And if you're not, well, I can assure you the coaches will help you get in shape very, very quickly. But I mean, I think it can be done, where, you know, you get on campus and you get a month before your first game. It can be done. Does Fleck and his staff want it to be that way? Absolutely not. They want an additional 4 weeks to get these guys back into game shape, everybody on the same page, and then they go from there. But, I mean, Eric, you're a fellow Ole. I mean, you know. I mean, at St. Olaf, again, you don't have all the amenities that obviously a Division II or a Division I program has. As a D3 athlete, in your off months, I mean, it's essentially voluntary. And your first day of fall camp, you show up, and here we go. So I think it can be done. Do I think they want to do it that way? No.
Well, I just think the D1 athlete today is such a different animal than it was 20 years ago, because they're in such peak condition, such low body fats, and they are just trained so highly by these performance coaches that, you know, when it's not done correctly and it's not monitored correctly and they're still pushing the limits like they are, you know, that's why you have these performance coaches, is to cut down those soft tissue injuries. And that's why I brought up, you know, maybe there need to be bigger rosters if this is the way they're going to run their season, because I think they're going to have more issues pop up with players getting injured. You know, soft tissue injuries, probably ligament injuries as well, as people get out of balance since they're not getting that kind of training oversight.
And I know that's where the Gopher football staff is even, again, I've just talked about it with them in general terms, but it's like, if college doesn't, or the season doesn't start till January, does that mean the 2021 class, who signs in December and enrolls in January, is eligible? I mean, is that a possible thing? Now, I'm not saying it is. I'm not saying that's something that the Gophers are counting on. But there are just so many unknowns with everything. And we're almost in May, and the start of the college football season's in 4 months, allegedly, or it's going to be in 7 or 8 months, allegedly. And there's just so many things that the NCAA is still sitting on. As, again, I understand they want to have the most information and the most amount of time to make the most educated decision. But in that same respect, you got to start making some decisions so some additional dominoes can continue to fall. So these football coaching staffs, as Eric points out, they can start to kind of tailor to what their roster is going to look like, because they also have to win games at the end of the day if they're going to keep their jobs.
Well, okay, let's talk about keeping jobs, right? With this financial uncertainty, you know, we've maybe even seen here in Minnesota, there was no coaching turnover in basketball, right? But conversely, in softball, we saw coaching turnover. And that really surprised me, especially given the fact that, you know, that season wasn't played. I guess I don't understand how institutions are going to feel comfortable even evaluating until there's some economic stability, whether or not to turn over a highly paid position like a coach of a football team or basketball or some of the higher revenue sports.
And also, I think you're going to have to look at those buyouts.
Oh, yeah.
Those aren't going to be options for athletic directors, and I don't think donors are going to be wanting to foot those bills either. So I think you're going to be seeing less turnover and big-time coaching.
So this is good for Gopher football, right? That's the conclusion we're coming to right now. If you're on the PJ Fleck bandwagon, in the boat, right? This is a good
thing. I mean, it's one of the things that folks have been stressing out about, is I believe Fleck's buyout is $10 million until December 31st of this year. And then it goes, Eric, again, you can correct me if I'm wrong, I think it's $4 or $5 million for 2021. But in that same respect, it's like, how can you, I mean, unless a donor just says, I'm going to foot the bill for the buyout of the current coach and the buyout of the next coach. I mean, it's like, how can you, you know, financially even approach to try and make some decisions with some of these high buyouts that some coaches have?
I mean, if you start seeing these schools have issues meeting their athletic budgets, the only way it happens is if a donor steps forward and does it. And I think already across the country, you're seeing donors not wanting to foot that kind of bill. They're wanting to put their money into facilities that you see across the country and put investments in those areas. I think Mark Coyle has made it very clear that if things go as expected with PJ Fleck, we're going to see annual extensions being signed, resetting the buyout windows. And right now, you know, you're not going to see schools want to try to lure PJ Fleck away after National Signing Day. You know, that's the big attribute of him as a coach, is being able to bring in all these top recruits that Ryan keeps everybody informed about.
And to echo Eric's point, I mean, I'm not trying to disprove him, but I agree with him. I think you will see, as Minnesota continues to have more success on the field, and now as they currently sit here in the recruiting rankings, I believe sixth in the country, Mark Coyle is incredibly aware of everything Minnesota is doing in recruiting. I can assure you of that. I'm sure Eric can assure you of that. And I would also surmise that the annual extension thing, yeah, it's probably going to continue to happen.
All right. So we're pretty confident that this season is going to happen, right? Fiscally, it has to. So let's take.
I would be absolutely gobsmacked.
Yeah.
If there was not a college football season.
Okay. So let's.
Eric,
what
do you think?
It's going to happen. I think it's going to happen in the spring. I think you might see some reduced schedules, but I agree. Students have to come back on campus first, and you have to see how the institutions can handle that population. And then once that happens, you're going to see athletes return to their training regimens, and we're going to see how that happens. But once we get some concrete data on how that's going, then I think you can plan for a season. But until you take those steps and you start turning up the dial, you won't know for sure.
And when you say spring, do you mean like, you know, January, like a spring semester, not the actual spring, like March, April timeframe?
I think athletes will start training around January 1st when they come back from winter break. I think there'll be students first in the fall, and I think you'll see some gradual training start to happen, but I don't think they'll start training until January, which means I don't think you see games until the end of February, because I think coaches are going to want that 4 to 8 week reacclimation timeline so that they don't have to deal with as many injuries.
Okay, then how do we deal with the weather then? If we're talking any kind of January, February, March, are we looking at playing these games indoors? A lot of these fields, and this isn't just unique to Minnesota, right? This is, let's think Big Ten. A lot of these fields are not made to play, you know, outdoor football in very cold weather.
Yeah, I think schools are already looking at what dome stadiums are available and how to kind of do these pods of games where you have, you know, triple headers at US Bank Stadium. I think you're going to see other domes around the country be utilized by these teams, and they're going to try to work, I think, with the NFL to make this a possible solution because they want to get these games in.
So what you're telling me is this is what bankrupted the XFL.
Yeah.
Sorry.
And even Eric, I mean, I know that I've heard like places like the Fargo Dome or Miller Park, or you mentioned US Bank Stadium, Northern Iowa's indoor dome down there in Iowa. I would be shocked if that's where Iowa and Iowa State didn't play their games, but it's going to be just such a different reality to kind of take all in, because as you mentioned, I mean, I think there are very realistic possibilities where, I mean, you have an 11 o'clock game, probably a 4 o'clock game, and then an 8:30. I mean, cause again, you got to allow these guys to get off the field, got to allow people to get on the field, warm up, different types of things. But that's going to be that's post COVID world that we're dealing with here. And I guess that's kind of the new reality.
Yeah. I think you're going to see prepple like schedules where you have multiple games all spread out over a day, over a weekend, trying to fit all these scheduled contests in. And I think Minnesota is fortunate to have an NFL team right next door where they can use that building and probably host other teams.
So the one thing I was also curious about, I haven't asked you about this, Eric, previously, but you know, if they do a shortened schedule, how does the media rights thing work out, right? The University of Minnesota, I believe, gets somewhere in the range of like 35-ish million a year with that Big Ten Network contract. If they're playing significantly fewer games, does that then ratchet down the amount of revenue that they would bring in? Or do you actually even know how that works?
I wouldn't know how that works exactly, but I think, you know, there's going to be a lot of eyes on college football when it finally comes back.
Right.
And I don't know how big of a hit it'll take, because I don't think those non-conference games are a key part of the TV package. It's the conference games that they have.
Yeah, and I've been seeing some speculation that likely, you know, if and when and they go to shortened schedules, it may be conference only. But you, as you brought up very astutely, that hurts a lot of small schools because they depend so greatly on those non-conference games, you know, whether they're getting paid to play them or if they're hosting as well, right?
Yeah, and I know there's a lot of basketball programs that aren't signing non-conference contracts right now.
Right.
So there's a lot of open dates for college basketball because teams just aren't willing to put pen to paper and guarantee those games. And I think that's also happening in college hockey a little bit too. There's some uncertainty of how things are going to work out next year.
So if the groupthink really does come to the idea of Luke, myself, and Eric here, is there's going to be nothing going on in the fall for football, I think you guys should help me try to plan my fall hunting and fishing schedules, because I'll never have another opportunity like this. So how many trips to Lake of the Woods is too much, potentially, if I'm allowed to go up there and get in some walleye fishing? And how big of a buck am I going to hold out for now that I know I'm hopefully going to get enough adequate hours in a tree?
I think how you answer the deer hunting question is, I think this is the one time in your life, Ryan, unless you take another job, that you could actually travel to another state to do some other big game hunting. You might want to consider that actually as your prime travel experience.
I'm going to have to think about it. I mean, there's just so many possibilities.
I think like
too many.
Alaska moose hunting or elk hunting, well, you know, something like that.
Luke, business is good, but I can assure you it's not that good that I can think about traveling to Alaska.
Is there any stimulus check that could make that happen for you?
Is there any plane that, I mean, even getting back to this, I mean, it's like, are people or even institutions going to feel comfortable putting their athletes on planes? Because, I mean, you look at the airplane industry right now, it's a ghost town. Mm-hmm. I mean, I even know I was supposed to fly out to California for a wedding in March, and they've honored it, and I got my money back or my miles or whatever it was. And now it's like, hey, you can use that extension through like December of 2022. Well, we're talking about January of 2021, things get going again. So are we expecting, oh, even say Maryland, to come all the way out and take a bus from Maryland to Minnesota to play a game?
No, they'll fly. I mean, they'll fly.
Is everyone going to feel comfortable doing so?
I mean, well, okay. I don't know.
There's a lot of Big Ten schools that already charter. I think you'll just see sure. more of that.
I would say too, like, I mean, it's very early, but some of those states that have started to open up where, you know, for economic reasons, early indications are that the general public still is not confident as a consumer right now. The point I'm trying to make, Ryan, is that you're onto something. It's going to take a little bit for people, to feel comfortable like going out, et cetera. And that, you know, whether or not fans are even allowed, I wouldn't be surprised if attendance is down significantly, especially, you know, as they can trace some of the outbreaks in like, Italy and Spain back to soccer matches. Right. I think it's going to take some time before people are even comfortable going back into seats.
Is this the point where we put cardboard cutouts of people when you can pay like $100 to get your cardboard cut out in seats? Is that going to be a thing?
I don't know, man. Here's the reality of the situation. I love going to games, don't get me wrong, but the TV product is good, and we all know that it generates an incredible amount of money, right? So I am curious whether or not this further impacts the struggle that college football has in getting attendance back to, or basically they're losing attendance and actually building that back up. And this isn't just a Minnesota problem, right? This is a national problem. We've talked to Eric, to you about this previously. I don't think this helps at all.
No. And you look at the fans in the stands between the 20s, and there's a lot of at-risk people who have those season tickets.
Right.
So you ain't lying.
For them. I know that, you know, NHL teams are trying to figure out what they're going to do with their ticketing. You talk about a league that's reliant on ticket revenue to survive. That's one of the big ones. They need fans in the seats in order for the budgets to work. And it's a tough sell because the safety is just something that's such an unknown right now.
Yeah, it will be very interesting to see in particular how that plays out. I have seen some ticketing systems starting to, or ticketing websites, I should say, starting to build out UIs that show, you know, what social distancing might look like at live events. And it's very, very, very sparse, you know, because of how packed in seats are, et cetera. It will be pretty interesting to see what might actually happen when these games go live.
And the big reason you go to a game is to experience something like you saw this year with Minnesota Penn State, where it's a packed house and it's crowd and everybody's on their feet for kickoff. And then when they win, everybody can storm the field. You know, that's why people go to games. It's not for a better view.
Right. Yeah, absolutely. Again, very interesting times that we have ahead of us. We appreciate Eric, you joining and providing some context. Obviously, we lean on you heavily when it comes to the financial side of college athletics, et cetera. Before we leave, though, how are you feeling about Gopher hockey?
I wish they would have gotten the end of the season played, because this was a team that I thought was coming together. Bob seems to do a really nice job with his program developing players. You know, he played his freshman defenseman. Now, Jackson Lacombe and Ryan Johnson made huge steps this year. Like, they were so good by the end of the season, they could count on them. And they had to take their lumps early in the season. You know, when you saw them play Minnesota Duluth and North Dakota, that was not a great hockey team. And he got that out of them by playing them in those situations and allowing them to learn from it. And he isn't going to be bringing in very many players for next year. So he's got a loaded roster, a lot of his guys, and he spent a lot of time with them. So it's a big season ahead, and it's going to be difficult if they have a shortened season like we're expecting.
Gun to your head, Jake Ratzlaff, does he sign with Gopher Hockey? Or does he play for Gopher Hockey?
Gun to my head, I think he's a football player. I think that's the kind of person he is, and that's what he wants to do. I think there's always a lot of pressure for a kid like him who's played at the select level for his country and has been scouted as much as he's been scouted for the NHL. But when you have that kind of indecision in a player, it's hard to think that he's going to choose the sport he doesn't love.
Well, we want to thank you for joining us again, Eric. If you enjoy Eric, check him out on the Gopher Puck Live podcast. It is actually quite good. And if you know nothing about hockey, it's very educational. I can wave my hand and say I am one of those people that listens from time to time, and I find it very enjoyable. So make sure you guys go and check that out. Again, want to thank you all for listening. Appreciate it. Thanks for listening. Go Gophers.
My cat was choking himself on the blinds, like the blind cord. I just...